This is Red Ice Radio. I'm Henrik Palmgren from Sweden. Welcome. Glad to have you with us if you're joining us for the first time. And welcome back to all our regular listeners. RedIce.tv and RedIceMembers.com is the website. Check it out. A lot of material there for you. Our guest today is Colin Flaherty. He is an award-winning author of the best-selling books White Girl, Bleed a Lot, and Don't Make the Black Kids Angry. His story of how a black man was unjustly convicted of trying to kill his white girlfriend resulted in his release from state prison, and the story was featured on NPR, the LA Times, and Court TV. Colin returns to the show for another discussion about the issues of escalating black mob violence and black-on-white racial crime. This is a huge issue, a huge controversy that remains hidden and covered up by the mainstream media. We discuss how the controlled media relentlessly hammers away at the convoluted stories of black oppression and discrimination while brushing over the truth of the insane hostility and violence that cops and average citizens deal with on a regular basis. We are going to talk about Black Lives Matter, Obama, the DNC, Hillary, crime statistics, violence against police, and many, many more things. So stay tuned for another eye-opening discussion. Welcome, Colin Flaherty. Great to have you back on the show. Hope you've been doing well since we last spoke. I think it's about probably a year ago, probably a little bit more since we had you on the show last time.
Unfortunately, for people documenting black-on-white racial violence, business has never been better.
That is true. I don't know who could argue with that, but I'm sure there are some people that would argue with that. Why don't we actually do that first then, Colin? Because, you know, explain to us a bit what it is that you've spent the last few years talking about and trying to raise awareness of. Because, you know, we get newcomers all the time on the show. We shouldn't forget about them. If you were talking to an average liberal, let's say, in the U.S. or a democratic socialist in Europe, how would you explain to them what you've been trying to convey?
I'd say on my YouTube channel and in my books, we do two things. One, we document the enormous level of black mob violence, black on white crime, and black criminality in America. Then two, at the same time, we document, not just say, we show how reporters and public officials ignore, deny, condone, excuse, encourage, and even lie about it. So I don't do a lot of causes. I don't do a lot of solutions because I'm dealing with a lot of people who say this doesn't even exist, or worse, they're saying the real problem is white on black violence. So I just produce a lot of videos, a lot of articles, a lot of books over and over and over that show there's something really, really wrong with black on white criminality in the United States.
Well, how is that perceived though? Because I mean, obviously, if you were to look at the media, you would get a perception that basically we have a police force that is largely built up of white European Americans. And they're largely a machine that's built on systemic racism, that it's out there just shooting black people indiscriminately, right? I mean, that's the perception one would get if we look at the mainstream media in the U.S.
Yeah, here's the perception is that if all you knew about what's happening here is what you learned from American media or even worse, European media, then you would know for sure that black people are relentless victims of relentless white racism all the time, everywhere. That explains everything. Especially why cops are always picking on black people for no reason whatsoever over here. And boy, it's so easy. I call that the biggest lie of our generation, but it's a story you can read in the newspaper or see on TV every day.
There are certain scenarios, of course, that are not always just, you know, black and white, pun intended, I guess. But we had, for example, the recent shooting of this black guy who was helping the autistic, kid, and apparently the cop made a mistake. I don't know if he said that he shot the wrong guy or he thought that, you know, he was trying to help the autistic boy or vice versa. I forget the exact details of the story, but the point is there's millions of interactions between police and civilians in the U.S. every year, and some of them are obviously statistically going to end up kind of, you know, in a bad situation, right?
Yeah, well, you know, we don't say that white crime is non-existent or that police do not make mistakes. What we do say is that this whole black on white thing is wildly out of proportion. Also wildly out of proportion is the amount of black violence directed at cops versus the other way around. Every cop in America now is a target of black. It's very racial. black harassment, black taunting, black threats, black violence, and even black murder. And we don't hear enough about that either. I spend a lot of time documenting that as well.
Why is that then, do you think? I mean, who's responsible for that? Should we? I think we should look towards the media, because we've had so many cases where the media hone in on one of these scenarios. They hammer it for days on end, weeks on end in some cases, and pick apart these cases to show it was a white police officer that just indiscriminately shot a black person, right? Is that what has led this antagonism between police and the African-American community?
Well, that's part of it. And again, I don't even know how fruitful it is to talk about the causes of it, because a lot of people say it doesn't exist, or if it exists, it exists for good reasons. All I'm saying is, people, is if you know any cops, talk to them. Talk to them about what their life is like every day now, how they are targets of this racial harassment. And sure, if you read the newspapers, TV, radio, you'll absolutely see a lot of people who encourage that kind of behavior.
What did you think of the cases that we had before the? I want to talk about the Dallas police shooting a bit with you, but we had two cases before that. It was Philando Castile and Alton Sterling. What was your initial perception of these two?
Well, on the case of Alton Sterling, I mean, so I did a video on that on my YouTube channel. And I reminded people of one thing. It was kind of trivial, but it's still worth noting. I mean, the stuff he was doing outside there was illegal. He was illegally selling DVDs. I came across one of these public service industry DVDs, public service announcements from the movie industry. And it showed, I think they were in Japan, but it showed this Japanese guy and this really hot looking Japanese cop. They're chasing this guy with guns drawn because he was counterfeiting movies and selling them. So some people take that very seriously. But on the other level, this is a guy with a felon. He had a gun. He didn't comply with police orders. I mean, if he obeyed the law, he'd be alive today. And on that second one, I haven't spent much time on that, but did that guy have a gun or not? I think he did.
Well, one of the things that happened is that I think it was South American, the cop, though, so that kind of narrative fell apart a little bit there about white police officers. But I think that he said after he was shot, that's when the video starts up, right? That's when the lady in the car starts streaming this live to Facebook. And he said very shortly after she starts it up, I told him not to go for it, right? That's what he said. So indication seems to have been that, you know, the cop is probably on edge with everything that's going on, and he was reaching for something in the glove compartment or something because they have declared he had a gun, so he probably thought he was going for the gun or something, right? I mean,
some people say the gun was visible on his lap, but right. I tell you the truth, I haven't looked at it that carefully. I'm just waiting. A lot of times, I just like to wait for the facts to come out. I've done some videos on him, but
yeah,
I mean, but it's weird. I mean, so this woman, his girlfriend, is out there. That live streaming was weird.
Yes.
It's weird that he was a suspect in a convenience store holdup a week before in that area where they stole some cigarettes. It's weird at the press conference, his girlfriend was smoking the same kind of cigarettes that were stolen. So I don't know. This stuff goes round and around.
Yeah, I mean, it was some people that pulled out, for example, I forget which one was which now, but one was Crips and one was Bloods, apparently, of Philando and Alton. And
I've seen Philando's Facebook page where he does display and talk about his affiliation with the Crips.
Right, exactly. So again, we're back to this position where the media is utterly lying, because they're presenting an image to us where we had a well-adjusted, you know, guy, and he was like, basically, they're painting these guys out to be angels, right? They never did anything wrong, and it's just so disingenuous.
Well, what is the greatest example of that this year? It just happened a few days ago in Philadelphia, the Democratic National Convention. I think, what do they call, Mothers for something or other? But Michael Brown's mother, Sandra Bland's mother, all these people that are either thugs or hoaxers, their mothers were on the stage trying to convince us of what you just said.
Yep.
I mean, I sometimes have a hard time kind of getting my head around how crazy that is.
It's true. Yeah, it's remarkable. I mean, we don't have to trail off here now, but it's the same thing with with illegals in the U.S. You know, it's like someone made a pretty good tweet. They said, jump the fence to try to get into the DNC and you get arrested, and then jump the fence at the border and you get to speak at the DNC. You know, it's like,
well, you know, it's funny how people, I mean, I make the comparison also with what's going on in Europe. I mean, all this bad stuff's going on in Europe with immigrants, and all these people in the media look at it and go, oh, what are you talking about, Colin? There's nothing wrong over there. Everybody's happy over there. And I see the same thing with the stuff happening here with the level of black crime, or you see these mothers on the stage and you go, hey, wait a minute, what is that? Sounds crazy. And they go, what are you talking about? So here we're getting to a point. Here's what the point where we're getting to. Either A, you and I are crazy as bat guana, or B, a lot of other people are. I'll choose B.
I'll choose B too. I think the perception that people are fed within the media is a very restricted and controlled narrative that is intended to kind of derail us from the truth in reality. I mean, it's, I don't see it any other way, to be honest.
So, and here's what troubles me the most. I was watching, what troubles me the most is how much these narratives are accepted and unchallenged on the mainstream media. And now the narrative is, it's not just, you know, black people are victims of poverty and poor education and lousy housing. No, the main narrative now is white black people are victims of white racism. And I mean, just the other day, I saw a guy on CNN who was on there for like 20 minutes with the main guy, with the main host, Cuomo, on CNN. And they were talking about Black Lives Matter. At some point, he said, you know, black people aren't going to listen to old white people anymore. Then this morning on NPR, the most popular show on National Public Radio in America is a show called This American Life with Ira Glass. So they did a show on difficult things you have to tell your children. One of the segments was on race. So they get this guy named Kamau Bell. He says he's a comedian.
Yeah, that guy.
And they go interview somebody else, and the guy's telling about how he taught his daughter at 5 years old about white racism. And he described with gusto and glee to laughter from everybody in that room how black people, he said, used to grind up glass and put it in the food of soldiers and cops so they would bleed to death. That was like the funniest thing these people had ever heard. Now, all of us have to deal with craziness and that kind of ignorance on a daily basis. But when it gets celebrated on a mainstream outlet like National Public Radio, all I have to say about that is what Bob Dylan said, the times, they are a-changing.
Yeah, they certainly are. You know, I've noticed that too. I mean, I have to say it's, I've watched more CNN the last 6-7 months maybe than I ever have before, just as a study and see what actually goes on in the mainstream media narrative, if you will. And it's been very interesting to see that the dialogue that they have in the media is very much, I would say, it's close to a supremacist one from a black perspective. I always try to tell people that reverse the scenario, right? If you hear them talk about something that concerns, you know, black people or like Muslims in Europe or Arabs or whatever, shift that around and look at it from the point of view of if they were talking either about, you know, white people or trying to raise them up or whatever. In many cases, they would never accept a discussion to be handled and done in that way. I mean, you have, for example, agitators like Van Jones that get like, you know, prime time on CNN, so, you know, talking about these things, or Angela Rye and these people who are very hostile, I think, on a racial level to white people. And this has now become the mainstream narrative on American television. What do you think about this?
And so here's the biggest lie of all that they tell. So your buddy Van Jones will be on, or any of those other people. And it's amazing how easy this is to find. They'll go, you know what, Heinrich, we have to have a conversation about race. But then just yesterday, a TV weatherman in Dallas, he got fired yesterday because a couple days ago he was talking on his Facebook page about the mothers, Michael Brown's mother at the convention. He said, I'm furious that they would put the mother of this thug on national TV and pretend he's a saint. He got fired for that.
That's right.
So every time somebody wants to have a discussion, you know what? That's the biggest lie of all.
They just shut it down. You know, I want to speak about the Dallas shooting here a little bit later, but one of the things I saw after that was pretty interesting. I think it was a judge or maybe it was a mayor or something down in Dallas. I forget now who it was. It was some kind of important person. He was talking to MSNBC or something like that, and he was talking about what we can do for our children in this case and how we can educate our children. It was just what you said before, that basically the perception that they want us to share with our children is that we are perpetually in a position of power and influence as white people, right? And if you are black, you're permanently discriminated against. You're going to be in a position where just because of the color of your skin, you're never going to be given the same opportunities. And that it's important that you as a child do everything you can to equalize this imbalance. And I just found that remarkable, you know, considering how many programs there are in the United States that actually discriminate against white people on a racial basis, such as affirmative action, such as these, you know, scholarships that are handed to non-white people just because of the fact that they're non-white, right? I mean, if there's any racial discrimination going on in this day and age, it's against white people, right?
There's no doubt about that. You know, you probably do the same thing that I do when I watch CNN. I do this for CNN and NBC. I kind of have an internal stopwatch in my head. As soon as I turn it on, I just listen for how long it takes for somebody to say something that is ridiculously untrue. I mean, like a Van Jones saying, you know, that black people are relentless victims of white racism. You know, when you talk about Dallas, okay, listen, you know, what do we hear about Dallas except every guy on CNN and MSNBC and the others, they say Dallas was a peaceful rally. Well, as soon as that shooting happened, 300 to 400 black people went down to a convenience store nearby. They looted it. They beat the hell out of the clerks. Then they went into the parking lot and started to celebrate. This is all on video. There's a video that I use on my videos of a whole bunch of black people laughing and dancing.
Yeah.
In response to the killing of the five cops. Then they put the camera on a black activist in Dallas, and they said, "What do you think of this?" Well, he said, "I'm sorry about it." Then he went on for five more minutes how it's an important message to white people that, you know, they really suck. And, you know, this whole construction that Obama uses and everybody else uses now, you know, it's like Obama will say, "Well, you know, I like free enterprise. That's why we have to nationalize the healthcare system. You know, I like the Second Amendment. That's why I have to grab your guns. I like cops, but that's why I have to remind you that they're a bunch of racist pigs," which is basically what Obama did at their funeral. I mean, everybody just, when they hear that, they go, "Oh, isn't that nice? He likes cops."
I think Obama has found a way that no previous president has to explain and to a certain extent kind of convolute the message of reversing things or using things to his own advantage in a way that I haven't seen before. I mean, obviously his speech writers are incredibly talented. It's well thought out, and they spend probably days on end thinking about these speeches that he does. But you're absolutely right. I mean, he's managed to twist and turn the truth in so many different ways. And I mean, he even has personal allegiance. I think he even invites, what's his name? Derry McKesson to the White House.
The Black Lives Matter crowd is in the White House all the time, not just for Christmas parties. They're meeting with Loretta Lynch. I mean, it's no secret. That's the interesting part of all this. None of this is a secret,
no,
right?
No.
It's like they tweet it. They brag about it. There's the guy, Ta-Nehisi Coates, wrote a book called Letter to My Son. It's a huge bestseller last year. It was basically a book about how white people are always picking on black people for no reason whatsoever. This guy's been in the White House more often than Joe Biden, I think.
Interesting. Did you catch the conversation that apparently was a leaked conversation on Twitter, but personal messages, I guess, between McKesson, one more girl who said she had ties with Loretta Lynch, and they were talking about instigating or bringing protests with Black Lives Matter to such an extent that it would actually shut down the upcoming election. Did you catch that story?
You know, I caught that, but I just never spent enough time on it to figure out if it was real. I mean, there's no doubt right. That somebody got into his account. I just don't know if it was real or not.
That was a tricky. Did you follow anything about the DNC emails? By the way, same thing there. I mean, there are tons of emails leaked. I've only managed to look at a fraction of them so far.
Yeah, I've looked at some of them, and you know, it's, you know, if you look on American TV and movies, there's that TV show called The West Wing, and there was another one called Primary Colors, both by the same guy, Aaron Sorkin. But the Democrats are always thoughtful and kind, and they're always having these long thoughts, thumb-sucking discussions about how are we going to do the right thing. That, of course, is a bunch of malarkey. But what is true is the picture you get from the emails. They're nothing but a bunch of petty and grasping and small-minded people. And that is there for the world to see.
Vicious, too, by the way. Really hateful. It was interesting to
vicious,
see.
Vicious, hateful, you know? All those things. Yeah, yeah.
It's amazing. All right, let's speak a bit about Dallas, the police shooting that occurred there. Were you surprised when this happened? I thought, first thing I thought was, well, it was just a matter of time, I guess.
I try to stay surprised at all this stuff. But even before Dallas, I had written a story about all the police shootings over the last month. And it was like, you know, when they shot those three guys, and there was another one, right? A couple days before that, the three guys in Baton Rouge. And I said, listen, this one's getting all the attention, but look at all these other black on cop episodes of violence over the last month. And I just went down, and this was for American Thinker. This name, one after another, and how cops are targets, and the reporters, they just don't seem to care that much.
No, that's right. Yeah, so wasn't Gavin Long was one of the guys in killed two officers in Baton Rouge? I thought that was after the... Was that after the Dallas attacks? Yeah, I can't even separate them anymore.
neither can I, to tell you the truth.
There are so many of them. They occur all the time. There was, I think, two or three that I heard afterwards as well, where one or two police officers had been shot. But it's interesting because the media cherry pick, they always just pick, you know, a few of them here. In Dallas, I think that we're just basically forced to deal with it because it was just such a huge story. But in other cases, if it's one or two cops shot, they just don't raise it at all. It comes up on the local media, maybe, but not to the national media, right?
And nobody will connect the dots in the local media. Nobody will say that this is a part of a pattern of violence against police officers. They'll just sit there and they always do the, you know, we're very sad about this, but they won't connect the dots and won't say what's obvious, which is police are under attack from violent black people every day. And that is now the default response. When a cop pulls somebody over or when a cop goes into a black neighborhood and walks up into a 7-Eleven, the default response is defiance, threats, and violence. So many videos of that.
It's true. I mean, one of the things they did after Dallas was to call for unity. That's one thing they always say. They say the same things after every one of these. Unity, we have to come together, we have to do all these things, right? But then the actions of the authorities and media combined is actually one that continues to drive wedges between these different groups and continue to exacerbate the already very tense situation. I always find that pretty interesting.
For your European listeners, over here we define unity as, the call for unity is actually translated as, please ignore everything I just did to cause this event. And so, you know, that's why what you're doing is so important. I mean, everybody has to do what they can to speak out and speak the truth here. And so you're speaking the truth. I'm speaking the truth. We have to find a way to do it in a way that people listen to us. And because there's such a mountain of denial, it's really going to take a mountain of people to take it down.
Yeah, it's true. It's definitely true. I mean, one of the things that's kind of easy, I guess, to look at is the crime rates in Chicago, right? I mean, the weekend murder reports. I was fairly unaware of this, I have to say, until just a few years ago, and I didn't realize how bad it was. And I was wondered when I started to reading about that, why it was that these cases were never raised in the media. I mean, my God, this is an epidemic. There are other things occurring within society where if we have a couple of lives lost, we are practically asked to reform our entire society and change things on a systemic basis to make sure that these lives aren't lost in the future. In this case, with Chicago and many of these other big cities in America, where it's just out of control with the murder rates, you don't really hear that discussion, do you?
No, and I have a lot of people, a lot of cops, law enforcement in general, active and retired, who come to my YouTube channel and read my books, a lot of them, especially in Chicago. And they're always sending me stories about what's going on in Chicago. And the story of Chicago is, today, the story is, it's not just black people killing each other now. It's black people moving into the white, not moving, not like with a moving band, but just traveling into the white neighborhoods and practicing violence and mayhem and chaos there. Lots and lots of people are, lots of people are moving out of Chicago now. It's very difficult to recruit cops. But because here's the true story of Chicago is the true story of lots of other chocolate cities across America. The people who run Chicago believe black people are victims of white racism. The black criminals are victims of white racism. And that's how they treat them. And they treat the cops as the predators who are practicing the white racism. And so if you listen to the council meetings, if you see the sentences people get for committing these unbelievable crimes, if you see how they treat the cops and the people who attack the cops, you'll see that the cops are the bad guys. The criminals, the black criminality people, are the good guys. I mean, I don't see how that's sustainable.
I mean, this is going to lead to utter chaos. I mean, what if they got their will, right? Let's say that police started to dismantle. I mean, I think it's going to go in the opposite direction. We can talk about that in a minute. There are many people who are, you know, very pro-gun, they're pro-liberty and all the, you know, this kind of movement in America that are afraid of the militarization of the police. And this, of course, would be the excuse for it. But at this stage, at this early stage, it's in denial. And it seems to me that the authorities want to work in the opposite direction, where they want to dismantle the police almost. They want to make sure that they're not around anymore because they're the ones who are causing all the problem, right? But what would happen if they got their will? I mean, it would be chaos. It would be warfare, basically, right?
Yeah, you mentioned Van Jones. It was Van Jones just a couple of days ago on CNN. This is a favorite. You know, it's funny, like nobody says something by themselves. So if Van Jones says it, it's chances are we've heard it before and we'll hear it again. But Van Jones's big thing now is that arresting people causes crime. Putting people in prison causes crime.
Right. Yep.
I mean, it's like some kind of crazy quantum reality, right? If you arrest somebody, that means this has an effect on the past that's going to cause the person to commit crime. It's insane. And I did a story, gosh, almost a year ago now, where I got a call from a Chicago cop. I get a lot of calls from cops. And he was saying, the sergeant told us we're going to have to depolice that neighborhood. I said, what?
Yep.
He said, yeah, we're depolicing it. That's the scariest thing I've ever heard in my life, that term.
God. I mean, so what do they expect us to do? I mean, right, just roll on over and give up, right? Don't put people in, don't reprimand people, don't go after them.
Yes to all that. Isn't that, okay, I say that knowing that it sounds stupid to say that. I represent to you that that is 100% true.
Obviously, that must, at the end of it, then have an opposite effect, right? That it's almost, I mean, I don't know how much they think about these things. I mean, I think there's a big virus of like social justice warrior, sentiments within people's minds today. They've been largely programmed, as you say. They've gotten all their information fed by the mainstream media through movies for you know, decades on end, which has created this one version of reality, which they're trying to kind of heal or repair because they see it as broken, right? But later on, one of the effects of all of this is obviously going to be an incredible increase in crime. And I think we're already seeing that in certain cities. I think it was Trump that actually referenced that in one of his speeches, right? He talked about the fact that crime is going up in many of these cities for the first time in many, many years. And this is going to continue to happen. And so obviously at the end of this call-in, you're going to probably have a militarization of the police that we haven't seen before. What do you think is going to be the end result of this?
Well, I think you're right about that. But, you know, I talk a lot about this and Don't Make the Black Kids Angry, and in a lot of my videos, this whole idea of crime statistics. They're not reliable anymore. The cops, in Baltimore last year, the mayor of Baltimore was bragging that, you know, the buzzword is, we're not going to arrest our way out of this mess. So she was bragging that instead of arresting 100,000 people a year in Baltimore, they arrested 50,000. When Mayor de Blasio was sworn in as the mayor of New York last year, Harry Belafonte got up there and gave a really rip-roaring speech about how, you know, we're oppressing all these black people by arresting them all the time for no reason whatsoever, and this is like police state. 2 days later, Bloomberg's top aide came out and he said, what are you talking about? We've been reducing the number of arrests by 30 to 40% per year. So now it's like an auction. They're trying to say how low they can get their arrest rate to go down. So the numbers, you know, it's really not good to arrest somebody anymore. Front page New York Times story about 2 years ago. It was talking about how difficult it is to get a cop to take a police report in New York. They've been ordered, don't take them. We got to drive these crime numbers down. So you talk about, you know, the buzzword is cradle to prison pipeline. So you talk about that. You talk about witness intimidation. You talk about stitches for snitches. You talk about Bronx juries, where black juries tend not to convict black defendants. And all of a sudden you've got all these things dancing around, circling the crime numbers, and the crime numbers, as bad as they are. I mean, black crime is what? 6, 10, 20, 50, 1,000 times worse than white crime, right? Depending on which one you're talking about. Really worse. But then you throw these other numbers on there, and as bad as they are, they're even worse. So these crime statistics, Obama talked about the crime stats the other night, and it's like he spent 7 years telling people we can't arrest kids in school anymore. I mean, there's some criminals in school. They're not arresting them. They're not even suspending them. And so you look at the number, you know, you look at the numbers on school arrests, goes, arrests are down. No, well, mayhem and violence is up. And finally, the teachers are starting to come out and say, we're not safe anymore. I've done a ton of videos, a ton of writing about how teachers are victims of black violence over and over and over in schools. And it's all on video. They're coming out and talking about it. I mean, in Baltimore, 4 teachers are assaulted every day that we know about.
Yeah. It's just remarkable. I mean, one of the things I've noticed is that in America, many things is on a racial level. I mean, despite the fact that a while back, I think they kind of declared it was like we're approaching some kind of post-racial society now or whatever. But whenever you do look at these kinds of stories or whatever, it's hyper focus on race, right? It's
100%. Yeah.
You know, you mentioned this, for example, about the judges, right? If there's black judges, they will work and operate on a level which is beneficial to them as a group, right? I mean, it's kind of
documented that many times.
It's a level of corruption that maybe would be more difficult for someone who's more objective, a white objective person to understand, right? Oh, if they're trying to be fair or whatever. But if you have this image that they have been given, an idea that you're permanently discriminated against, right, then they, as black people, will have to do everything they can to kind of balance that, right, balance that imbalance. So to a certain extent, they see it as justified, whether it's right or not, perhaps.
I mean, there was a case in Louisville. See, I like just talking about stories, right? So what you said, an example of that is in Louisville last year, 2 black people were on trial for a very nasty home invasion of a young couple and a 3-year-old girl. So they got convicted. And so they did, you know, here we do victim impact statements. So they read the mom's statement. The mom said, my daughter is now afraid of black people because of the horrific things that happened in our home. The judge stopped the proceedings and he started reaming out the mom for saying that about her racist daughter.
Yep.
And there are these criminals sitting in the same room. One of them and eventually ended up getting off on probation. The other one did a couple years. But this is the same judge that does that stuff all the time. He has dismissed juries if there were not enough black people on the jury. So, you know, I was talking, you were talking about this post-racial thing. I was talking to a reporter, a writer, for the Nation of Islam's newspaper. It's called Final Call. And he said, well, Colin, you're probably one of those white guys believe we're living in a post-racial society. I said, no, the United States is the most race-conscious country on this planet. I mean, we talk about black churches, black colleges, black TV, black radio, black newspaper, black music, black culture, thousands of black institutions. But when you come around and go, hey, what's up with that institutionalized level of black crime? The same reporters look at you and say, I don't know, Colin. I'm colorblind.
Exactly.
So it's kind of crazy.
That's true. It's true. And then it's funny, too, because, you know, you can't even form a white student union without there being a national outcry.
So here's the thing. So to me, this whole racial consciousness is collectivism, whatever your favorite word for collectivism is, socialism, whatever, I don't care. It's collectivism at its worst. In this country, our idea, at least the ideal it used to be, is individualism, right? I look you in the eye and I take you for who you are. You take me for who I am. And that's all it is. And so I don't understand when I hear some people go, hey, well, it's only fair. Let's have a white students union. No. You're going in the opposite direction. We have right. to go in the direction of individual merit and ability, not this crazy collectivism that is nothing but a big con game.
And I hear that a lot. And what I have to say about that is I think that that in itself is a uniquely, it's a unique product of the Western mind, I think, if I'm honest about it. I think it's because we have an issue of biology, right? I mean, that stands kind of in the way of us just seeing each other as individuals. So if you have a group, I think there's a tendency of a kind of a natural attraction to that group, don't you think?
Yeah, I understand that. Okay, I do. But I also understand a little bit of that goes a long way. And I also know that, like I was just talking about that Camus Bell. I just finished listening to him for 30 minutes on NPR. I just made a video out of it. I'll tell you what, that's going above and beyond the call of duty. But he's talking, you know, he's talking about how he's going to raise his kids, right? And he goes, well, this has made me more determined than ever. I'm going to talk to my kids about race and racism every day from now on. And, you know, and so this is something that...
and he has a white wife, by the way.
Yeah, that is correct, sir. Yeah. Yeah, so you know who he is. Yep. But the other, I heard one of his bits, he's not really funny, right?
No.
But he does these tours. So he's talking about his white wife. And he goes, well, I got a white wife. But she's not one of those, you know, she's not one of those angry, crazy white women who marry a brother just because they're angry at their daddy. Everybody in the audience starts laughing. So, God. I don't know. It's weird, isn't it?
Oof, yeah. Oh, my God. All right. Well, let's see here. One of the things I want to discuss with you a little bit is a bit more about Black Lives Matter. There was a petition a while back to actually... deem this a terrorist organization. And actually, according to the definition of terrorism, it's the use of violence and intimidation in the pursuit of political aims. I guess it's quite a few groups that could be classified as terrorists if you take the definition at its face value. But what do you think about that? I mean, is it not that it would matter, I guess. I mean, they will continue to do whatever they want. But just as an idea for people of realizing what it is that they have done to this point, well, how do you think we should deal with a group like that?
Yeah, I don't think people really listen to what Black Lives Matter is saying. And if you do, and if you've watched all their videos, as I have, then you know how insidious they are and how insidious their aims are. But again, it's not like this is not like the Rotary Club, right? They don't have cards and memberships and meetings. Just like 2 weeks ago, there's a little beach town near Philadelphia. It's like the favorite beach area for Washington, D.C. There's an area called Rehoboth and Ocean City, Maryland. That's where all the D.C. people go. It's supposed to be a nice white bread little beach town, right? 2 weekends ago, I did a story about hundreds and hundreds of black people on the boardwalk who were attacking cops, who were fighting the people on the boardwalk, destroying property. And of course, as soon as the cops showed up, everybody started yelling Black Lives Matter. Now, the new local newspaper, the only one that did a decent account of it, they went out of their way to say, well, there's no evidence. This is part of the Black Lives Matter national organization. Well, that kind of misses the point. You know, everybody's like, if that's the cause of the week, that's what everybody's down with this week.
You know, one of the things we talked about before we started the show was what's been happening in London. You had a huge, I don't know what to call it, scuffle.
Why don't we call it what it was? A riot.
A riot. There you go. Thanks. I was actually trying to reach for the right word, but there you go. Black Lives Matter. And again, I mean, whether they actually are in any way, as you say, card-carrying members doesn't matter. It seems that the promotion of BLM has been so successful around the world that you have other groups of people who have migrated from Africa to Europe that is now associating themselves with the plight of you know, black Americans, that they're picking up on this term and they're starting to riot in Hyde Park in London, in smaller towns in France. It's unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah, and okay, so that is what it is, right? We see it on video. I did a video on it, same in France. But there's also one other thing that's the same as what it is here in America. You get the local constable in London. I remember this guy word for word going, "Oh, don't worry, this is isolated. It's not Black Lives Matter. It's, you know, nothing, race has nothing to do with this. It's just a couple things that got out of hand." And, you know, people were throwing rocks and bottles at cops. Somebody got stabbed. Everybody was yelling Black Lives Matter. This was not cucumber sandwiches with the Queen.
Right. No, it was not. It was not. I suspect we're just kind of seeing the beginning of this too, unfortunately. What are some of the statistics? I mean, one of the things I usually refer to this one, and I'm sure you said you have multiple of these in Don't Make the Black Kids Angry, your book. But according to the 2010 National Crime Victimization Survey, which is done by the Bureau of Justice Statistics, it means that if you adjust for the population size, the differences between white and black populations, blacks commit 25 times more violent assaults than whites do against blacks. These statistics...
That number could be as high as... You multiply that by 10, and nobody can give you a serious argument against that either.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
That bad?
Yeah. This is a common theme on my YouTube channel. Show me the white on black videos.
Right.
We document black on white violence by the thousands.
Yeah.
We're documenting it black on old, against old, against gay people, against young people, against Asian people. It's got a story this morning out of Minneapolis. Black people are now targeting Hispanic people. Dozens and dozens of Hispanic people have been robbed and beat in the last month in Minneapolis. Another thing I document and Don't Make the Black Kids Angry.
Indians. I saw the video about Indians. Tell us about that
Indians,
case.
I mean, you know, I actually did a chapter about that in Don't Make the Black Kids Angry as well. There are gangs of black people that travel the country looking to do home invasions on people from India. And it gets down to as basic as this. They pick up a phone book. I mean, how many last names are there in India? There's only like six. Really, there's only six. And, you know, one of the names is Singh, S-I-N-G-H. So you start looking for Singhs in a nice neighborhood. Boom. Go in there. And Indians love gold. You grab their gold or you just get them on the street or, you know, they're just, at another level, you know, a lot of them are just older and they're just easy. They're such soft targets. Enormous amount of black on immigrant violence here. Amazing how much there is.
I mean, I think it's such a mess, Colin, in terms of the fact that, you know, the borders are wide open in America and same thing happens in Europe. And we're going to take a break in a little bit. And I want to ask you more about Europe and your opinions of what have been happening there in just the recent 6 months. Is just, I mean, it's a disaster. We'll get into it.
I'm going to be listening to you on that more about that than I do.
Yeah, no, well, let's talk about it. But one of the things is that it's utter madness to have this perception that we are going to create a peaceful, loving, functioning society by having tons of different people from different cultures come in and then try to live side by side in connection with, you know, Obama running programs such as the targeting white zip codes so that, you know, there can't be white neighborhoods anymore in certain areas. They have to try to break everything up and forcefully diversify in this way. I think it's going to lead to chaos. What do you think?
Well, you know, Milton Friedman said, as long as you have a welfare state, you cannot have open borders. But having said that, I mean, you've been to the United States many times. Did you see white people having any trouble with Asian people or Indian people? It's like, no, this really is a place where immigrants, you know, can come and make something out of themselves. And a lot of people are happy to be here. You know, the ones we let in who are willing to kind of buy into the whole thing. But all of a sudden, you know, then all of a sudden overnight, there's a couple of 100,000 people from Somali living here. And it's like, it's a complete catastrophe. So.
Yeah, that's right. I know. Minnesota, all the gangs up there, they've been terrorizing. Yeah. And they love that for some reason. I mean, we're getting in Sweden, we're getting hit by Somalians really hard too. It's like someone has thought out a plan. They love that combo for some reason. Like the put the Somalis next to the Swedes. That's a perfect cocktail of a disaster or something. I don't know.
Well, I keep reading the headlines on that, and it seems like it really that really can't get any worse in Sweden.
All right. Well, let's talk about that a bit more in the second here. But let's plug the books a bit and talk about your websites and what people can find there. And you have, of course, videos, YouTube channels. I think you had your YouTube channel shut down, right? But you got just a backup going, or what happened with that?
So I saw a story in a Pittsburgh TV station. It was all blurred out. There was a little kid in the middle. He was surrounded by a bunch of other kids. You couldn't tell who was who, nor could you hear anything. I called the mom in Pittsburgh, said, can I get a copy of the original of that? Yeah. It was a little white kid surrounded by a dozen black kids who were harassing him, taunting, threatening, finally beat the hell out of him. I put that on YouTube right away. And half the commentary I put on there was about how the reporters are complicit in this violence by not letting us see what it really is. Anyway, next day, YouTube sends me a note saying, you're glorifying violence against children.
Ugh. God,
said,
really?
I'm exposing it. Oh. And, you know, YouTube was unimpressed, so they yanked me down. But I was up the next day. I don't care. I'm just going back up.
All right. Well, we're going to add a link up, to the YouTube channel. I encourage people to subscribe. Check it regularly. The videos that come by my desk, if you will, when call it updates, is just remarkable. Some of these things you can't believe until you see it for yourself. You do have a knack for finding these stories out of local outlets here and there. So definitely
people
check
that. Send cops and people send them to me from all over the country now.
Right,
it's amazing. Yep. And the question is, Colin, did you see this?
All right. So the recent book is "Don't Make the Black Kids Angry," and the one before that is "White Girl Bleed a Lot." And tell us the website where people can go to pick up a copy of your books.
The book's easy to find. Probably easier to find "White Girl Bleed a Lot" at my website, thewhitegirlbleedalot.com. But the books are easy to find. Amazon's the best place to get them. But they're in bookstores. But Amazon's the best place. And here's what I find people do with the books. So a lot of people read the books. I'm very flattered. You know, all the nice reviews I got and all the number of books I sold and how much people like them. But a lot of people, they actually buy two books. Because they take the second one to their next family gathering, you know, and they find their liberal brother-in-law standing over in the corner. They take the book over there, they slam it on the table, and they say, read this, you no good SOB. I don't know if those books ever get read, but they get bought.
Yeah, I was just going to say, do you hear anything back on that? I said, yep, I managed to convince another guy or something. Do you hear back from people?
I tell you what I hear from a little bit on that. What I hear that every day on YouTube. I hear people say, Colin, when I first came to your YouTube channel, I thought you were a bad person making all this stuff up. But there's so much. I do 3 or 4 videos a day, and each one is worse than the next. I mean, and so that's where I get people going, Colin, I owe you an apology. I get that a lot.
Very good. The website is White Girl Bleed a Lot. I'll add a link to it. Definitely check it out, folks, and do take a look at the books and support Colin's work. We'll have links up to these on the website as well. We'll take a short break right here, then we'll be back with more in the second segment with Colin Flaherty. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. If you enjoy the first hour, definitely stay tuned. We're going to continue for a second one at redicemembers.com. You will need to acquire a membership to continue to listen. That's how we do it here, since we are a commercial-free radio program. We are listener-supported. We also do a lot of video material. We have an exclusive live TV show for members on Saturdays called Weekend Warrior. And we have over 1,000 shows for you in our members archive. Definitely head on over there, redicemembers.com. Take a look in the archives. You don't have to be a member to browse around. As we continue with Colin in the second segment, we discuss the media agenda of painting whites as oppressive racists. And Colin gives his take on the Democrats and liberals' obsession with racial consciousness. We discuss militarization of police forces in response to increasing crime waves in the large cities. And then we focus on Europe's ongoing struggle with Islamic terrorism as migrants pour into welfare-generous countries like mine, Sweden, but also to Germany, England, Norway, France, and many, many others. We also talk about the successful promotion of Black Lives Matter in the American media, because now it's spread both to England and France that now has its own branch of BLM. We talk more about that. Go to redicemembers.com, sign up, and tune in. You can stream or download any of our previous shows. You can watch our live shows, see our exclusive video versions of some of the interviews that we do, and get access to everything that we've done back to our start in 2006. On Wednesday, we'll be back with a 314. On Friday, we spend an hour with Richard Spencer. And then on Saturday, we have our live show. Don't miss it. We will speak to you after the break. Thank you for listening and for your support and helping to spread the word about the broadcast. Stay tuned.